this is Mother Storm, and I'm about to read the sermon I preached on the second Sunday of Christmas in 2026, the first Sunday of the new year. And that's the day when we have in the church multiple readings to choose from. I chose, as I often do, the Visitation of the Wise Men, which we formally celebrate on January 6th, which this year was, I think it was Tuesday. So this way we can, in the church on Sunday, hear this story, especially for those of us who don't do Epiphany Day services. So here is that sermon, and thank you for listening. Merry Christmas. Bet you're not hearing that much anymore, but I'm going to keep saying it. Merry Christmas. We're not done with the season, and in fact, a large portion of the Christian world hasn't even gotten to their Christmas day. The Eastern Orthodox churches begin the season of Christmas starting this Wednesday, January 7. I was made very much aware of this 5 years ago when a group from St. James traveled to the Holy Land, where there are all varieties of Christians, though far fewer of us over there than there once were. It was an unexpected treat on that trip to have gotten through all of our Christmas celebrations over here, only to repeat the whole thing again over there. Back here, though, and among those of us who trace our roots to the customs of the West, or Rome, tomorrow is day 12, the last day of Christmas. Epiphany follows on January 6, when we celebrate the arrival of the wise men to the child Jesus. Their arrival marks the start of a new season in the church. But to many of us, they're the culmination of Christmas, the final ones to reach the manger and complete this perfect scene of worshipers around the Holy Family. I used to make us hold back the wise men and camels from the creche until, at the earliest, this second Sunday of Christmas. Now I'm just happy if someone puts the thing up. But it was my attempt, back in my more rigid and exacting days, to remind us that this whole grand tableau that we so adore, with the shepherds, the angels, the wise men and their gifts, the sheep, the oxen, mother and father, all gathered around a newborn babe, is not really how the Gospels tell the story. The arrival of the shepherds and the arrival of the wise men are told in entirely different Gospels, neither with any seeming awareness of the other. In Luke, the local Judean shepherds visit Jesus in a stable the very night of the birth, and they have only to travel from the fields of Bethlehem to its village behind an inn, in a barn or maybe a cave where the baby Jesus lay. In Matthew, it's wise men, foreigners, Gentiles who visit the child, and they take who knows how long to arrive. Days, months maybe. Some sources say up to a year or more. Herod's decree to slaughter all the children in Bethlehem under 2 years old for fear one of them really is the king that the wise men came so far to see makes it seem that Jesus, by the time of their visit, could have been a toddler, in which case the wise men surely didn't visit the stable, but a home, wherever Joseph and Mary, according to Matthew's gospel, spent those first couple years while still living in Bethlehem. Something in us, though, resists this gradual, fragmented picture of the Nativity. As early as the second century, a Christian named Tatian composed the Dia Tessaron, a single-volume harmonized account of all four of the Gospels, ridding them of their discrepancies and contradictions. There's no surviving manuscript of the work. We know about it through other sources, and we've no detail of what he did with the Nativity accounts, but I bet that the mashing together of all these people and moments started with him. In any case, pretty early in the Christian tradition, we imagined one night with a star and a stable packed with all those that ever laid eyes on the child Jesus. Not just the shepherds and magi, his parents and a few angels, but pretty soon others as well. Curious villagers, a midwife, Mary's mother, exotic animals like peacocks and zebras. Boris Pasternak, the Russian poet, has a famous Christmas poem called The Star of the Nativity. It's kind of a verbal arrangement of the creche, these figures, what we have here next to the pulpit, but in words. Throngs of admirers in his poem come to worship the newborn child. The shepherds, angels, the kings, they're all there, streaming towards the manger in this glorious procession. When they get there, though, a practical and somewhat incredulous Mary stands at the door, looking at them all, saying, "You can't all come in. Some must wait here." Spoken like a woman. Of course they can't all come in. It doesn't work. And that doesn't matter. Because these visitors, finally here, after days of travel, but with everyone else impossibly still there and still adoring, in that cold, under that one roof, on that one night, speaks to a need we have to see this story that way. Our desire isn't for historical or textual accuracy. It's a yearning for a place and a faith where we know everyone belongs, and everyone can be together, whatever their background, whatever their means, they're here, we're here, side by side, united by the simple act of worship, of fixing our gaze on something, someone outside of and greater than ourselves. Think of it as the first church service. Today's the last Sunday of Christmas, tomorrow the last day. Soon we'll put the creche, all this, away in storage for another year. But we here gathered are the embodiment of that first night, or what we imagine it to be. And what we imagine it to be is just as important as what it was. So week after week, as we gather here, may we remember that we're the living shepherds and magi and angels and sheep and lambs and dogs and chickens and all variety of God's creatures under the sun or star, diverse and wonderful, whom we remember on this last Sunday of Christmas. Amen.